Hi, welcome to Not Another Marketing Podcast, where I'm talking to Corey Northcutt, the founder of boutique SEO agency Northcutt.com, and we're talking about project management and business workflows. Thanks for downloading. Now, project management and building workflows can be areas that agencies kind of skip over a little bit. A lot of information is stored in people's heads, and workflows are kind of made up on a day-to-day basis. We wing it, in other words. Lots of folks do that. Now, joining me is Corey Northcutt, the CEO of SEO agency Northcutt, which you can find at northcutt.com. That's NORTHCUTT.com. It's a fascinating chat. Corey explains his agency's project management techniques, his workflows and business processes, and talks about a couple of tools that could help us. Can I quickly mention that Not Another Marketing Podcast is totally ad-free? Love it if you could subscribe to the pod. Give us a quick shout on social media. You can find out more podcasts at jtid.co.uk/podcasts. Now, the first thing I asked Corey was, can we take a more structured and formal approach to managing workflow within our agency, especially when we're dealing with more complicated projects? Are there better ways of doing things than just running our business from memory?
I sure hope so, because yeah. That's how we try. I would even double down on what you said and say it's most agencies. If not just about all that we encounter, it's rare to see the problem really fleshed out. And there's something to be said, I think, in SEO for not handcuffing yourself to a bad plan. Like, I don't think you ever want to be on rails in terms of how you manage things. But we love our processes. Everyone comes at SEO from a different place. I went to school for systems architecture, so everything's a system to us at Northcutt.
So it's. I mean, I'll give you an example of a company I went and visited a few years ago, and it's nothing to do with marketing or anything like that. They used to custom build packaging boxes. Now, when I mean packaging boxes, they were packaging missiles, tanks, Land Rovers. These were custom built wooden boxes, and there were about half a dozen guys who had the knowledge of how to build these boxes stored in their head. Mm-hmm. Nowhere was it written down. It was in their heads, and they were getting to a problem that these people were retiring. Do we find this maybe even in the marketing world, where a lot of the information, a lot of the knowledge is stored in somebody's head and it's not written down in some sort of formal process?
All the time. And I don't think it's just marketing. Like, I've run companies in other industries. One big red flag, actually, in my last company was people hoarding information. And, you know, I kind of get it, like that defensiveness of, like, you know, I make myself crucial to the company by not sharing, right? And IT is notorious for it too, because it's like, well, I don't want to give out access. I don't want anyone to know how this works. And, you know, you can kind of hide behind it's a security thing. But at some level, like, that's not responsible, right? Like, you can't train somebody, you can't scale. If, God forbid, something happens to that employee, like, the business is in a really bad place. So systems are everything.
So how do we start doing this? If we're a mid-sized marketing agency, how do we start applying this?
Sure. So we've been kind of modeling and remodeling at Northcutt what our process is from beginning to end, you know, over the past decade. And we've done it a few different ways. Really, really happy with how it works these days. And what I guess I began with was what I went to school for, which is something that you see a lot with systems analysis and systems architecture. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, a lot of people see it as an IT degree, and you can actually do it without touching a computer ever, which is often surprising to people, that you can do systems analysis purely by modeling a system as it exists in reality. And hopefully from there, you can improve upon it. And that's the concept in a nutshell. So take a system that happens naturally anywhere. Like, it can be your day. And you're going to build some diagrams, right? You're going to build some flowcharts. Like, I go from here to here. This happens next. And patterns start to emerge, things that you don't realize. Like, oh, wow, now that I actually said that out loud and wrote it down, that's a really dumb way to do that. Maybe it should happen in a different order. Maybe there's something I could automate. And that's where sort of the software development lifecycle comes into play of, okay, maybe I can write software that solves this problem eloquently and serves the problem and not just, hey, I wanted to write some software. So we're not a software company at Northcutt, but the same idea does play. Our initial iterations of processes were really heavily predicated on, well, we need to do this at this time, so write it down. And we did that for a number of years, and it worked really well. So we would do optimization for a client. So what's our process? We would take a brief outline and run through it, and it wasn't perfect. Different variables would get thrown our way that we didn't plan for every time we worked for a new client, but we'd refine it. Over time, we started to realize that all of our rough documents were still not that great, right? We had all these Google Docs floating everywhere. And I think that's really common. You see this a lot. You see people starting to turn to different software solutions. Like, if I only had this wiki, like, this would solve it.
Yeah.
I hate wikis. Wikis are where documentation just goes to die.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. I've made them myself in the past, and I've never looked at them.
Yeah. And we had them in our past company, but yeah, the problem is that it doesn't live in the workflow, right? Like, if I'm in my day-to-day routine and something happens, am I going to dig 10 pages deep, like, try to figure out what that was called, click through some other links halfway down the page? No, I'm not going to do that. It's not going to happen. I'm not going to think to do that. So, well, I tried to do this in my IT company. It didn't work very well. So I think the failing of the wiki for us, and the Google Docs as well, was that it didn't live within the workflow. So that was kind of rule number one, I think, is we rebuilt our process model here in like 2015. And I started thinking back to, you know, what is the core of our system? When I learned SEO, there wasn't a lot of information on the web at all.
True.
That was like 2002, 2003. Basically, we all hopped on a bunch of forums. You've been around too. You probably remember the Search Engine Watch forums.
Yeah.
Back when Danny Sullivan was in charge. And I still remember a thread that got really popular there of, I don't think we even had Matt Cutts really telling us anything back then. It was just, figure it out, guys. And that's exactly what we were trying to do, kind of collaboratively. I remember one person summarized, I think, that forum thread for the first time. And I'm pretty sure this webpage is still online. It's called Vaughn's One Pager of Google Ranking Factors. I had this thing bookmarked, I think, before any other SEO content ever. And it was his attempt to tie every bit of evidence that he had, every theory, to what Google was looking at. And it makes sense, right? I think Simon Sinek has a book called Begin with the Why. Right? It's really common in not just in marketing, but in business and wherever. Begin with the why. Why am I doing this in the first place? Yeah. So with SEO, begin with the why. So we created our own list. The Vaughn's One Pager article is actually still online, but it's super out of date. So we created a new fact check. And what I did was go through every single other list I could find. Actually, a lot of the facts in other people's lists became our myths. That's actually where just about all of our myths came from. A lot of good resources out there. You know, Bill Slosky has been going through all the patents since forever, but there wasn't really a great index of, you know, what we take from them.
Yeah.
And I looked at three key pieces of information, right? Patent filings, direct statements from Google, and as much as possible, science, right? Like if someone's applied the scientific method to an experiment. And none of them have been completely individually perfect. Like, science is the best, but it's hard to do in a vacuum, really, with so many different things. Patent filings, they don't always hold up, right? Like, you don't know that Google necessarily meant to do it, and it's just that they thought about it. And then statements from Google, I can think of at least 5 or 6 different factors where, even recently, Matt Cutts, Danny Sullivan, Gary Illis, is it Ilias? I don't know. I only read things on the internet.
Yeah, I ruin people's names, so I try and avoid pronunciations, yeah.
That's wise. Don't start a podcast. And John Mueller, like, they all contradict each other. And I'll tweet to one of them and say, hey, can you kind of iron out this contradiction? Yeah. I have a 0% success rate with that.
Yeah.
So there's so many different things where just the contradiction lives on. But we got a good fact check. We got a good why. So that was step one in terms of how we answer SEO, how we consult if a client has a question. But from that, it wasn't very actionable. So next we needed a how. We built a audit framework that runs 28 modules, about 1,200 steps, and it was everything. And, you know, we recently spoke about website performance. Like, that's a great example. It's one factor, but it's who knows how many steps, really, to do it right. we just try to come up with the best analysis that we can of, you know, look at Core Web Vitals, look at your waterfall reports in another tool, ask some qualitative questions like, hey, do you really need all this crap on your website?
Yeah.
And then hopefully you come out okay after you've gone through that full inventory, that full checklist, sort of like you mentioned. So that's been effective from the perspective of doing technical SEO, but it's not the whole system, right? So modeling from beginning to end, we need something that lives in the workflow. The tools that I found really made things great for us were Glue.biz, G-L-U-U. I think they're based in like Denmark. Right. Really obscure tool, but I just really like the tool. And it's very visual. So it ties back to what we would do like in college with Visio, only it's very purposed to just doing process modeling. So looking at, well, it's nice having the checklist, but as actually we spoke about the last time, who actually does what?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I need a deeper modeling of what a business process looks like, more than just an SEO process, because that's not enough. So understanding who does what, and it's predicated on flowcharts, but also swim lanes of roles. So if this, then this, make this decision at this point, and everything is owned by a person instead of a raw diagram. And we started to realize as we did these models, well, there's another failing in our system too. You've got a lot of documents, a lot of processes. We don't have processes. We have a process. Was kind of this a light bulb moment. And it actually was not something that was completely original to my thinking. I actually didn't even take it from my academic background. I was reading the book Traction, which is increasingly pretty popular. As a management model. So they've got this thing, EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System, which is kind of a dumb, flashy name in ways, maybe. It's similar to other past management models if you went to business school, I guess. I didn't. But they talk about how you should have a singular process. You don't have processes, and you want it in such a state to where your organization is so organized, you could print it all out, slap it down on somebody's desk, and say, this is the business. This is everything that happens from front to back. Like, yeah. This is everything. So having all these diagrams, we built a top-level diagram, and we numbered our processes from 1 to 42 because I'm a huge Douglas Adams fan. It had to add up to 42. and that's what we did. We started taking it back to Google Docs and say, okay, let's number these. They actually fit together, and we actually have an index now, which is cool. So every single process modeled all the way down the line, 1 to 42. Another thing we take from EOS is that every process has an owner. So, challenge of growing an agency, well, we're up to about 20 full-time people here now, and what actually crushes so many agency owners and business owners in general is these inflection points at like 10 and 50 people, I'm told, where you can't wear any more hats.
Sure.
It just happens. Like, I was... 5 years ago, I was actually really dreading life because I was wearing like 16 really tiny hats, as yeah. I would phrase it.
Yeah.
And you've got to give ownership to the processes to people, I found. So each one of our 42 processes was owned by somebody in the organization. Some of them are directors, some of them aren't. Some of them are just like, hey, you know, this is one little thing, keep this up. This is your own little corner of the company. If this is screwy, if this becomes out of date, I'm looking to you to update it. And that becomes great. It keeps things moving in a way that I individually could not do by micromanaging everything. So that was good. And it gave us the ability to do that. Like, we're not, you know, working in a big warehouse or you know, a box manufacturer, so to speak, where I could slap it down on somebody's desk.
Sure.
But somebody has that option when they join the company. And what I found is that many do is they start by just, okay, I'll read the manual, right? And if I get lost, I go back to the manual. If I don't understand what someone in a different role is doing at a given time, I've got the manual, and that's great. But it still didn't give us exactly what we needed from start to finish, and that's when the technology came back into play, and the piece that really kind of got me excited was using a tool called Process Street, which isn't the only way you could do this, but of all the documentation tools that were out there, I looked at a bunch. There's some that are just made to use like EOS. It's one called ManageHub that's literally built for certain management models. But the thing I liked about Process Street was just how minimalist it is and that everything just kind of lives within the workflow. So I might have a checklist that pertains to 5 different people. At any given point, those people only see the steps that are relevant to them in a left-right sort of side-by-side, literally a checklist.
Yeah.
As they fill it in, they can add variables to these forms. And we might say, okay, we have a new client, they're an agency, they're an e-commerce client, I'm going to check that box. I have 5 more steps that are specific to e-commerce clients, and I'm going to look at these problems for them at that given point. It makes it very dynamic to where you don't get that information overload that you would by, okay, I still have this like 100-page manual over here. And it becomes very elegant. So we can chug through each of those steps. We can also sync it to Slack with Zapier, which we do, to where every department, every account team has these running streams of, hey, somebody from this account team took care of this for this client at this point. Don't need to give anyone a status update. Anyone can thumb between everything. It's just open and transparent. And it's just really elegant. It's been a game changer for us.
I mean, what happens when the client comes along and messes up all this process? Is there something built? Because I can hear marketing agencies screaming at me. We can write down all our process. This is exactly how it comes along, and then the client comes along, and it blows up because the client isn't working to the same process. How does that work?
Yeah. Well, looking back to systems analysis theory, they're part of the machine. We don't model our software, we model reality. So they're part of the machine. If it doesn't cater to them, it doesn't work, and we go back to the drawing board and fix it. I think in SEO specifically, the bigger challenge that we face over, say, like a creative agency, is that we're not set in one fixed direction at any given point. The opportunities are variable. Mid-month, we might get a Search Console alert. Like, we should deal with that, right?
Yeah.
We deal with it in some other ways in our system, and it's never perfect, but Northcutt does something that is, when we started, I don't think it was very common at all, and now I see it more and more, called point-based pricing. So when clients pay Northcutt, they get a retainer, but it's divided into tokens, credits, points, whatever you want to call them. Every client calls them something different. And we can plan them up in advance, but we can also move them around. Yeah. So the idea is that in our project management system, we get, all right, start of the month, we've got these plans, and they do scale into future months. But these will not be our plans. It's not going to work out this elegantly. We just know that. Instead, as things arise, we have that weekly, bi-weekly conversation with the client, and we pull it up in the project system again. We say, okay, you want us to build this big content piece this month involving a couple of your team members. The CEO sees this as an opportunity. We're not going to mess that up. We're not on rails, right? So what do we do? You could, sure, like, pay us for more credits, but more likely we're going to take some things and we're just going to displace them. We were planning this mobile audit this month. We're going to kick it into next month or the following month. And each of these credits has a fixed way to execute them. So, I mentioned our 28 module system. Every module has a very specific process to get it done, and then more documentation behind the scenes on how to hopefully really get it done. But we can move these things individually around just in these pieces.
Yeah, I like that idea, to be honest with you. It's nothing is fixed. It's quite agile, and which brings me to the next question. I think is that when you have this fixed process in place, can you still be agile enough, especially if you're working on long term projects that might take a year or two?
I think we can, and we get pushback from both sides too, from clients. There's always the, well, guys, what are you actually doing here? In the beginning, we couldn't answer that question. We went a long time, and I feel like that's a lot of agencies. I'm doing SEO. I'm going to do some audits. I'm going to do some content. I'm going to figure it out. We're going to get you some links. So being able to show a vision, I think, is also important. But yeah, being agile is too. And it's not really hard to move the tokens around. So the difficulty just becomes if a client asks for more and more, making them understand the system. And that has actually required us being very visual and very and showing them. I can't just say like, yeah, I can display some credits, because then they're going to get to the end of the month. And we had engagements like that for a while where people would be like, you guys have done nothing this month. I got no content. It's like, yeah, well, like, we've had 17 meetings. You know, like, you asked for these 3 audits. Like, we've been fixing this stuff on your site. The way we planned the month at the start was not how the month was at the end. And just setting expectations and continually resetting them in that environment is the challenge.
How important do you think it is to kind of like onboard new clients with this idea you have and this process you have and make them fully aware of what's going on? Should we work out a separate process for onboarding new clients?
We have one, and it's actually become very elegant. And I will say, for a long time, that was our biggest pain point. So from the onset with any new engagement, you know, we actually have a really good person in charge of our sales department. He's our chief revenue officer now, Zach Harris. He used to be the SEO director at SpyFu. And it was this learning curve that I had talking to other agency owners, where one made the joke at one point, don't hire a salesperson, man. That's my once annual mistake. Just don't do it. And I was like showing him, like, no, I got these interviewees. He's like, no, don't do it. Seriously. And that founder actually still did sales for his organization. And I looked at it. You know, there are a lot of agencies where, you know, the owner is going to wear a specific hat. And so frequently, the ideal hat in an agency is a salesperson because they are good at selling SEO. It's very frequent that they're an influencer. I'm not an influencer. I don't know why you even let me on your show, to be quite honest.
It's all those Twitter followers.
Yeah, but you get that engagement where it's predicated on selling, and that's not me. And I realized, well, what is my process? It's really just more consulting. That's what I always did for clients, and it worked, right? Yeah. Like, not to completely throw sales under the bus, like, there's valuable skills there, but my process was 90% knowing the SEO and 10%, well, okay, now I can communicate with you in an effective way and be a good listener and that kind of thing. So we do very, very high level consulting. And I think the most common mistake that I see with SEOs is just they get too gritty too fast. The very high level questions are really threefold in those conversations. So after we do a consultation, which has a fixed process, we ask a bunch of questions, we do an assessment. Assessment's free. I tried charging for it. I found that our conversion rate on assessments was ridiculous, and it just wasn't worth even messing around with.
Sure.
We do some of the most fantastic consulting I think so many of these organizations have ever even seen, and it's really just framing in very simple terms what their SEO problem really is. So, 3 things. Demand. So, where can I even take your SEO problem? And there's a lot of overassumptions there, right? We look at demand from potentially like 10 different dimensions. So, like, I'm looking at Google Trends. Well, dude, like, your industry is dying and you might not realize that, right? Actually, our beachhead market was web hosts. That was absolutely the case. Yeah. We needed to have that conversation. You've got your competitive analysis of how you compare to others. Sure, you've got keyword tools of what you can do. We try to get people more focused on the longer tail and like what's actually valuable. Oftentimes, people are focused on the wrong things there. And if we don't set that expectation of where can they take their site on the web, it's not going to go anywhere. So we will often do a sidestep. A great example, we were working with Narrative Science a while back, and we had a good conversation with those guys of, well, you actually hear this a lot now in SEO, natural language processing. That's basically a term that was invented by a couple different companies. Hmm. It has no search volume at all. So, okay, fine. What are we going to be focused on here? And there's options, right? So in that case, I think I looked at their use cases. Well, what can I use natural language processing for? And it turns out there's all sorts of things that people are searching that are just problem solution of, you know, I have to create my TPS reports or whatever, or I want to do some finance reporting. So much of that's not done by humans now. So we go through where demand should be and where we should be chasing it. And if we don't align on that first, everything else in this engagement is going to be a nightmare, right? Because I'm going to hand it over to a strategist and they're going to do completely the wrong thing.
Yeah.
So we figure that out. Where can we take this? And I like to look at it in terms of, you know, 3, 6 months, a year, 5 years, 10 years. And for so many brands, I think there really is that much vision in search, but only if you let them see it, right?
Well, one word which you've mentioned a few times is expectations.
Yes.
And I think this is where clients fall out with web developers, with SEO people, with marketing agencies. They fall out with everybody because the expectations of the two are completely different. This is important, isn't it, to get this right?
It really is. It's everything.
I'll tell you a quick story going back to like my early web development days, and we're talking sort of like, I don't know, 1999 maybe, a really dodgy 1990s website which was selling a few things. I mean, how we managed to get credit card payments on that. Oh, it was it was like weird controls that you had to install. Oh, it was horrible. And the expectation from the client was that they were going to have this website launched and they would instantly start selling things. And they came to me at the end of the month, first month, and they said, why haven't you sold me anything? And I said, dude, I said, I've built you this great website. Who have you told about this website? Well, no one. If I miss some sales, they said. Well, no. And it's the expectation, isn't it? How do we do this? How do we combat this?
So... After we have the demand, we look at positioning, and I think that's your answer. Where are you positioned based on the underlying metrics, right? Because Google really is math. Like, I hear people say it's not math frequently, but it is, right?
Yeah.
We've ultimately still got links, content. Algorithms are math. It literally is computing a number to come up with a search result. So across the major dimensions of off-page, creative, and technical, we've got, I think, half a dozen benchmarks under each of where are you comparatively to who's closest to you and who's really the incumbent in your industry that you really want to beat. And we sort of reason our way through that. You know, we probably won't be identical to anybody, but we can say they've got 5,000 pieces of content like this. It's killing it for them. This content is, you know, they've got less over here, but it performs better. Mm-hmm. And we can start to reason through that. And it shapes the strategy, which is the third piece of, you know, based on actually that example, do we create lots of small pieces of content or few larger pieces of content? We can weigh the risk and reward. There's some of each. That's the place to have that conversation. So by the time we pass this over to client onboarding, there's total alignment on, at least on the very, very top level where things are going. Chug it through Process Street, set up all the accounts, do, I think it's process number 11 onboarding at Northcutt, which is followed by process number 12, discovery, which is maybe the last and most important piece to get it going, which is just now that we know.
There's some Nintendo going on in the background there. Bless them. They're enjoying it.
It's actually my 3-year-old daughter.
Oh, well, don't stop her.
She's watching Snoopy.
No, don't quiet her, though. She sounds great. Sounds like she's having great fun.
She usually does. But yeah, the last piece, we give it to a director in each department. So our SEO director, our creative director, and our outreach director get an opportunity to look at the high-level plan and get a lot more nuanced with it. And once that's going, we should have enough alignment to go for a year or 2 years before we really need to recalibrate.
I mean, on the expectations thing, do you actually go to the level of saying to clients, this is not what we can do, that this is not our area, that this is what we can, and so that it's black and white, they understand exactly where you're coming from.
Yeah, I underappreciated that a lot. There's a lot of things we don't do too, and we will be upfront because, you know, everyone's happier there. Like, we've lost strategists in the early days of having really high anxiety engagements. There's a cost to that, right?
Yeah.
So we won't do local SEO if it's predominantly local. We won't do reputation management anymore if that's the primary KPI.
Yeah.
If it's a cleanup job, because everybody lies when they come to an agency. Yes. Like, yeah, I'm totally innocent. I've been wronged. It's like, yeah, that may or may not be, but usually it is not. Like when that's come up before.
How important is it for somebody to be kind of watching over this process? Do we still need project managers?
Yeah. So we in our system we have QA steps on everything. So it's the directors in each department. If we write a piece of content, it goes through the content director. Audit goes through the SEO director and so on and so forth.
So there's some sort of approval process put in place all the time.
Yep. And it's real simple. It's just one more stage in our, like, we have a custom workflow in our project management system.
And mention these tools again. What were the two tools which you recommended folks to go and have a look at to help build these processes?
Oh man, there's so many more than two, but I think the ones that I mentioned were Glue.biz, GLUU, is just a really nice kind of under the radar process modeling tool. And for actually managing the day to day, where processes live in the workflow, a tool called Process Street. Cool. Process.st.
Okay, what I'll do is I'll leave links in the show notes to all of those as well, so that easy to find.
Sounds great.
Corey, thanks so much for your time. It's been really interesting. Where can we find you? Where's your website and all your social media bits?
Yeah, really appreciate it. So our agency site is northcut.com, just my last name. My email is Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at northcut.com. And people can find me on Twitter as well, at Corey_Northcut.
Fantastic, Corey. Thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
Thanks again to Corey for his time. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe for more on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, your favorite podcast player. It's on Google Podcasts, Amazon Pod. It's everywhere. Just search for Not Another Marketing Podcast. Thanks for listening.